Hello, the messenger of good news. I'm your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk. We're going to talk for a few minutes this morning with Ron Schultz, the chief administrative officer of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, about a new document put out by his office called Protecting Your Congregation, a document designed to help congregations think about some of the potential issues that various court cases and legal decisions, particularly by the Supreme Court, might bring to bear on congregations, on schools, and various institutions of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Good morning, Ron. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So talk just for a second about the genesis of this project.
Well, the board of directors on a quarterly basis meets and talks about all matters of legal and business topics that affect the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And through the course of those conversations and certainly through the phone calls that we get, we realize that churches and schools are facing a daunting task of navigating legal matters and are really just looking for some direction on how to be best prepared should some unfortunate circumstances arise. So this is a resource that was put together with the hope of helping people find some answers, put some things in place before they run into issues.
So can you give an example of what one unfortunate circumstance might look like?
Well, I think one of the matters that's on everybody's mind these days is the matter of sexual orientation, and how does that legislation and how does the government's perspective on that affect congregations and schools? You know, what if a matter arises in a school regarding sexual orientation or identity? You know, the question about what kind of bathrooms do we need to have? Do we need to have separate facilities for our students or our parishioners? Those are the kinds of things that that are coming up much more frequently these days than they ever have in the past.
And so this document is providing both sort of background for that. It does not give legal advice, but it's going to maybe encourage you to speak to legal counsel, give you some of the right questions to ask to legal counsel.
Right. You know, we try to address quite a number of issues, and I think we've got about 30 documents out there that provide some insight or guidance into these kinds of matters. The goal here is to raise awareness of the issues and encourage congregations and schools to be proactive in putting some of these issues in front of their leadership. But you're right, we do stop short of giving legal advice. And the primary reason for that is that there are state laws, there are federal laws, some local laws. And in order for proper legal advice to be obtained, it really needs to be obtained there at your local level so that in each state and in each locale, they're getting the best advice for their particular circumstance.
But now I was just in the parish recently and before I came here, and this document came out and it came across my desk. I think you mailed a copy to I don't know if it was to the pastor or to the parish or to both. Maybe mm-hmm. It was both. But
right.
I remember being very excited about this. Said, oh, well, golly, this is good. And one of the things that I liked most was some of the policy language that was there as optional things that a congregation could adopt and sort kind of slide into its, not its constitution necessarily, maybe some of it was bylaw, but it's official documents as a way of preempting any shenanigans that might come later by having a clear statement about what you believe just kind of on the books.
Right. Yeah, what you'll find in the materials here available on the website are statements that congregations and schools can use for particular or certain circumstances. In many cases, congregations have statements already in place, and we're not suggesting that what they have is needs to be replaced with something that we've put out. But for those congregations and schools that maybe have a little bit of a hole in their documents or something might be missing, we've provided some sample policies that at least give them a starting place as they craft it for their own particular use. We have, particularly in the area of schools, for instance, we have sample letters for prospective parents, sample handbook agreements for parents and students. And really the goal there is to make sure that as you're talking with these prospective students and parents, that they understand what you as a school and as a congregation stand for, what your expectations are, so that down the road, should some incident come up, and we want to make it so that they can't come back and say, hey, we didn't know this is what we were signing up for. So most of this is preemptive, helping congregations put themselves in a position where everything is clear to prospective members, to their own members, as well as to parents and students in their Christian schools.
One of the things as a pastor I also really liked about having preemptive policy on any matter, not even necessarily because of legal counsel, but even just say, for the sake of, if I have somebody come to me and say, can your congregation do this? As a pastor, it's a lot nicer to be able to say no and not just have it be me standing by myself trying to hold a line, but it's in fact our position.
Right. Yeah. I think one of the other things that comes from this is a conversation between the leadership of the church, the pastor, and in many cases, the members of the congregation, where there are a lot of things that we tend to take for granted, and having a conversation, a specific conversation about these matters, I think, is always good. It puts people kind of on a level playing field, and they understand, they all have a mutual understanding of the things that they believe and the things that they stand for.
Or it's better to have this conversation with your elders before you're in a crisis, right? Than
Absolutely.
To find out you're in a crisis and you got an elder who's not on the same team.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're trying to do here, is put this out for people to think about prior to needing it.
Yeah.
And you know, we would hope that many of these things they never need, especially when they're confronting a challenge. But to think about them prior to the specific incident that might come up, it's much easier to think through it in a more reasonable way, a well-planned way, than when you're trying to react to a crisis.
And again, even though this is not official legal counsel, you do have, LCMS has official legal counsel, and they've been highly involved in the development of this.
Yeah, absolutely. The LCMS has a legal counsel that we've been working with now for almost 12 years. Prior to that, we had a different legal counsel, but they've been actively involved in reviewing and providing some content for this set of materials. We also work closely with the Alliance Defending Freedom, who was a big supporter of one of the main documents in this group of materials. That document, I think you referenced earlier, is titled Protecting Your Ministry, a Legal Guide for LCMS Congregations, Schools, and Ministries. That's a single document that brings together about half of these individual documents that are on the website. That was mailed to all congregations, all schools, this past fall. We've received quite a bit of positive comments, and as you would expect, as people started to work through some of these recommendations, we've received quite a number of calls for people asking for some clarification. But it's really having the impact that we had hoped, and it seems that it's a well-received resource that our congregations and schools are finding valuable.
Can you give that website address where people can go and find this stuff?
The easiest way to find it is to go to lcms.org/BOD, BOD for Board of Directors, and on the top right-hand side, you'll see a link to the legal resources.
Right. So again, lcms.org is kind of your go-to place for anything LCMS in general. But if you want to kind of navigate without having to navigate, you'd put a slash at the end and then BOD. The board minutes and other things also, I imagine, show up at that point, right? So anything the Board of Directors is doing.
That's right.
Is there on that spot. So, well, for just a moment here then, mentioning the Board of Directors, the Chief Administrative Officer is something maybe not everybody's familiar with what your job or role is in the LCMS. I certainly, I think I have something to learn about it. So you can maybe talk about that job, that role. What does the CAO do?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. I've been the Chief Administrative Officer since 2005. But the Chief Administrative Officer works directly for the Board of Directors. Our hierarchy here within the church and the national office doesn't include a chief executive officer. We have certainly the president of the synod, a number of other officers. And so I'm the one that reports to the board of directors and acts on behalf of the board. The board of directors in our organization is specifically assigned the tasks related to business, legal, property, finance kinds of matters. So really the business operation of the national office, as well as representing the church at large between conventions.
Yeah, I think in many congregations, people operate with sort of a church council and a board of elders that both do a hybrid of jobs and aren't necessarily functioning the way a board does. But when you get to the size of an organization, the way the LCMS is, you really want to have a group that's just going to worry about the fiscal kind of situation, right? And right. The property and be tasked with that specifically. Now, what kind of engagement then do you have with the Office of the President? Is there an overlap at all? Do you also deal with them on a daily basis?
The president, of course, sits on the board of directors, so he's a board member and is actively involved in all of the workings of the board of directors. But my office is just down the hall from his, and I interface with the Office of the President on a pretty regular basis. I sit on the administrative team, which is a bylaw-directed group, which includes the officers of the synod, so along with the secretary and the chief financial officer, chief mission officer. We interface with the president on a fairly regular basis on a myriad of topics.
Right. And then back on the board of directors, just people may not know, where do they come from? They just fall out of the sky?
No, I think it's a little more led by the Holy Spirit through the convention. So the board of directors members are all elected at our national convention every 3 years.
And they're a mixture of laity and pastors, or are they mainly laity?
They're primarily laity.
Yeah, that's what
we certainly do have some pastors. Some of the positions are elected on a regional basis, mm-hmm. so one from each of the five regions. We have some clergy members at large, and of course the president and the secretary are members of the board, voting members of the board of directors by their office. The first vice president of the synod is an advisory member.
Right.
To the board.
Right. And all of those other officer positions are elected positions. No, they're not, actually. It's a mix. I know the secretary is elected.
The secretary is elected, first vice president, along with the other vice presidents.
Right.
And the president are elected. The chief financial officer is appointed by the board of directors, and the chief mission officer is appointed by the president.
Okay. And then CAO just gets to hang around forever?
Well, as with the chief financial officer, our appointments are 3 years.
Okay.
And they're renewed every 3 years or replaced every 3 years.
Right. By the board of directors.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my position in the CFO, appointed by the board with the concurrence of the president.
Right. The interworkings of the LCMS here on KFUO. You got about a minute left here. Any last things you want to say about protecting my ministry, all these documents about helping prepare congregations for potential crisis?
Maybe just the final thought that many of the things that are covered in these documents, these resources, are things that people tend to take for granted or after they run into a problem, wish they hadn't taken them for granted.
Right.
So we would really encourage people to take a look at this list, find out which ones are most relevant for your particular ministry, and look to at least work through them with your congregational leadership or school leadership. The other thing is, as you run across items that maybe aren't specifically identified in these resources, let us know, reach out to us, because we want to make sure that we continue to add to this resource so it's most relevant for our constituents.
Talking with Ron Schultz, the Chief Administrative Officer of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, about protecting your congregation, protecting your ministry. You can find more at lcms.org/BOD and how to contact them if you would like these documents. They're also downloadable there. Listen to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. I'm Jonathan Fisk, and we'll be back in a moment with our daily lectionary study.